Hi, it's producer Chris from The Bugle here. Did you know that I have a new series of my podcast, Richie Firth Travel Hacker, out now? It's the show where Richie Firth and I talk about how to make travel better in our very special way. In this series, we discuss Lime Bikes, Teslas, the London Overground, and a whole bunch of other random stuff that possibly involves wheels or tracks or engines of some variety. God, what a hot sell this is. I mean, you must be so excited. Listen now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Bugle.
The prison planet wallows beneath unfriendly skies. Down in the muck, creatures once human scrabble for survival in the hostile swamps. Why they were sent there, few of them remember. Once you're on Parlax, you're not getting off. A rudimentary feudal system has formed, the strongest and most organised achieving a sort of government, preventing the most depraved of depravities in the interests of keeping some semblance of control. Let people lose that last scrap of humanity and you can't keep them on the leash. Their jailers orbit in the sky above, very little supervision is needed, yet below, the movements of the prisoners begin to achieve a sort of rhythm. A sense that rises from the mass of starved humanity, some shared song of victory or achievement. The Imperator looks down at the screen. Corporal, what's going on down there? The corporal salutes carefully. Sir, I'm sorry, sir. That is the Gargle. And this is the Gargle, the sonic glossy magazine to the Bugle's audio newspaper of visual world. I'm your host, Alice Fraser, and your guest editors for this week's edition of the magazine are John Luke Roberts.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. And hello. Eleanor Morton.
Hello. Hi.
Before we chain ourselves together and start breaking the rocks that are this week's top stories, let's have a look at the front cover. The front cover of the magazine this week is a tower of live human bodies reaching upwards, representing the deep and profound shared struggle to acquire Taylor Swift tickets. The satirical cartoon this week is the launch of the Barbie movie with Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling, with a group of scientists in lab coats drawing a graph that explains where participating in the Barbie movie's rave reception falls on the scale between irony, nostalgia, post-irony, kitsch camp, post-kitsch, sub-camp, post-post-irony, and post-postmodern, post-pre-post-pre-irony. So, good to know exactly where you fall.
Where's Susan Sontag when you need her?
I'm all of them. I'm every single one. I'm so excited about the movie.
I mean, there you go. That's the thing. Are you genuinely excited or are you ironically excited?
All of
or
it.
Both.
Yeah. Both. I'm going to wear pink to the show. It's going to be great. I'm so excited. I'm going to wear my bomb bag.
If there is not a sequence, I can't watch the Barbie movie because it won't be true to life. If there's not a sequence where two of them clash groins aggressively for at least 15 minutes, it's not real, is it?
Yeah. Or you know, I hope one of them at least will have like gnawed off feet.
Swapped heads. Mm. Yeah. Let's go with the real realism.
Yeah.
I was more of My Little Pony's boy, so I have no point of contact here.
Well, I mean there's a welcoming community for you if you wanted to reach into the nostalgia of bronydom.
I'm not sure. That's
no, don't
me.
Do it.
I'm not
with
sure.
A carefully
that's
gloved
it.
Hand.
I think that's a trap. I think that's a trick. I'm not going in.
It's a Trojan My Little Pony.
Oh, yeah. What can you get inside a My Little Pony? You'd be surprised. That's bronydom, I guess. Yeah.
It really is.
Top story now, and this is the news that legal contracts have been updated for the modern age, with a farmer Farmer being held liable for using a thumbs up emoji on receiving a contract as saying that he had accepted the contract. So, John Luke Roberts, you've accidentally agreed to a contract with a thumbs up. Can you unpack this story for us?
Yes. So, it's in Canada. A judge said that counts. That's basically it, isn't it? There was a farmer and somebody he had a long-standing business relationship with. There was the guy sent him, the buyer said, here's a contract for buying that grain. And the farmer replied with a thumbs up. And the judge has ruled that to mean that that is legally binding. Whereas he was arguing that the contract was just, he was just saying, yes, I've received that. Which I think actually, I am kind of with the judge on this. I think a thumbs up on a contract for, yes, I've received that, does not mean, yes, I've received that. It is worrying though, as precedents go, because this means that legally when I reply to a joke with a cry laughing emoji, it means I actually have laughed at the joke, and I can assure you that I haven't.
You're contractually obliged to laugh until you cry, John.
Yeah, I guess that's it too, isn't it? But just two tears. Well, although they do have to be from separate eyes.
Symmetrical. So
if I can only get like one eye crying, then it doesn't.
Then you'll be like
fit.
The statue of the Virgin Mary.
In many ways, I am.
I mean, you
stoical, unmovable.
Look good in blue.
Yeah. So yeah, that's sort of it. And I like it. I think we should dispense with contracts altogether and aim towards an entirely pictographic language again, back to sort of hieroglyphic things. So just picture of wheat, picture of wad of cash, thumbs up. That's all we need.
Yeah. Just bring it back to leaving complex curses on your graves for people to find and then deduce in year three for some reason. I feel like year three is the prime age for hieroglyphic translation.
Huh.
Was that just me?
Well, I'm sure it's really, it's probably really good observational material, but again, I have no way of, no contact with this. I can't...
If you didn't specifically do a project on Tutankhamun when you were in year three, this joke's going to go over your head.
I don't know what age year three is, but I definitely did one.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I completely misunderstood. I thought you meant 3 AD. I thought there'd been a surge in Egyptology at that point. Right, this makes far more sense now.
Oh, no, this is like the cryptocurrency thing all over again. You thought it couldn't possibly be as dumb as I was saying it was.
And then
this
it was
is a... three different school systems, and this is why this podcast is so problematic, because none of us really know what ages we talk about with each other. It's really difficult.
Which is why we need to go back to emojis. No room for misinterpretation
yes.
there.
Exactly.
Have you ever signed a contract with a thumbs up, Eleanor?
I mean, I've done the equivalent, which is not really read it and then scribble my name very quickly. And I have to say, an emoji response is great, because sometimes if you sign a contract, for some reason, some people still want you to print it out, sign it in real life, scan it and upload it again. And that is
it's exhausting to do all of those things and still not read it at the same time. You basically have to be trying really hard not to let your eyes skim the page.
The contract could be paying me £1 million, but if I had to print it out, sign it and rescan it, I wouldn't do it. It'd be off. No, I don't care what it's for.
I think you need to reassess your priorities, though.
I just got rid of my printer. I wasn't using it. And nobody send me anything to print off anymore. No, I feel like I've sent Luke definitely plenty of text messages where an emoji has been the entire response, and I'm glad that there was no legal precedent there, because God knows what I could have meant.
I'm gonna have to scroll back through my WhatsApps.
Yeah,
there's a hierarchy now, because you can do a reaction emoji on the body of the previous message, which is less commitment than a full emoji in a separate message, which implies that you've engaged more fully and emotionally with the message and have had taken the time rather than just attaching your emotion to their original thought.
Yeah. Well, there's also, like, if you reply with the emoji as a separate message, it's bigger.
Mm.
So if I'm just doing a tiny cry laugh at one of Luke's jokes, that you know, that's more realistic.
Just a little bit of a chuckle that made you feel melancholy towards the end.
If it's a separate, that's his brand. If it's a separate emoji that's massive, that really oversells how much I enjoyed.
Yeah, all right. Well, it's interesting you're bringing this up in the public forum.
And then, of course, the next level up is saying the emoji that you would do if you were able to navigate the emoji menu, which is mainly for boomers, but also for people who like to think of themselves as literary, incapable of engaging with the confusing world of pictures.
So just like typing,
crying, laughing, sad face emoji,
disassociation. Heart. Emoji.
Eggplant, eggplant.
And that's one of my favourites, the disassociation emoji.
What does that look like again?
It's got a dotted rim on the outside of it. It's a smiley face with dot, 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 dot. That's what I think of it for. Oh. I think before that people used the melty face for disassociation, but now I think it's the dot, dot, dot.
I prefer Monocle Man. I feel he's enigmatic.
I like Monocle Man, although I do wonder...
You're doing Monocle Man face right now.
I am doing Monocle Man face. Mm. And then there's the one with the finger on the face. The not Monocle Man. Man who wishes he had a monocle because then he wouldn't have to raise his hand to his face.
It means
I feel
thinking,
they're similar.
But no one actually ever does that. Do you guys do the face of the emoji you're trying to look for when you
order to seek it out?
Yeah.
I don't think I do, no.
I think I do.
No, but when I'm doing talk to text, I imbue the talking text with the emotion in my voice as I deliver it, which apparently is weird. Apparently you're meant to deliver it in a robotic monotone.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Does that translate into emojis, or does it? You can't talk to text in emoji.
No, by its very nature, text is stripped of external signifiers.
On the Monocle Man, I do think there should be more emojis with obsolete technology in. Like, I want a trebuchet man. I don't just want a
steam engine man.
Yeah.
Yep. The only thing that can beat a bad man with a trebuchet is a good man with a trebuchet on slightly higher ground.
Yeah, as long as they've got, like, really good mathematics sorted out for the aim.
Your ad section now, because you can't be what you can't buy. Funeral services are so anodyne these days. It's all, they're in a happier place, and what a great guy. We can scarcely hope to have our passing marked by the curses of our enemies and the petty rankling grudges of our friends anymore. Bringing you the most memorably appalling funeral rite script book, Dead to Rights, The Eulogy, with 6 great funerary speech templates to really drive home what a piece of shit you were, from listing mistresses to unpacking your search history. You don't want people to be sad you're gone, do you? The Eulogy. Get yours today, but for later, obviously. And if you're looking to pick someone up, but in that negging sort of way because you're doing an incredible online course on how to approach women by a man with the jawline of a serial killer, offer to get her a drink, but then whatever she asks for, bring her half a glass of water. Half a glass of water. If it works, you owe me money. And the Dancy Lagarde Reader is fully funded, but you can still pre-order a copy if you go to unbound.com and search Alice Fraser, or if you go to thebuglepodcast.com and look for the Dancy Lagarde Reader, you can get a copy of the best book about, or the best existing book.
I thought that was it. You can get a copy of the best book.
The best book that I am yet to write. No, the best existing book about Dancy Lagarde, the online romance maven and bestseller who I will be partnering with to create the Dancy Lagarde companion for your heart.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Now it's time for your top story in the next section, which is our robo-taxi news. And this is the news that robo-taxi activists, anti-robo-taxi activists, have realized that they can disable Cruise and Waymo robo-taxis by putting a traffic cone on the hood of the vehicle. And they've started doing that and are encouraging other people to do it too, standing in the way of the robot future. Eleanor Morton, you've done some suggestible things with traffic cones before. Can you unpack this story?
Yeah, sure. Yes, I have.
Put them on your head, pretend to be a witch. Come on.
I mean, they're very heavy, though. You don't want to do that unless you've got a robust head. So this is in San Francisco, where I believe, basically, because it's in, like, is it the Tech Valley? Is that what you'd call it? It feels like they seem to get all the weird products and new tech as, like, it's like the experiment ground for that. So the locals of San Francisco are always having to deal with whatever weird nonsense tech bros are coming up with. And obviously electric cars are... Not electric cars. They might be. Are they electric? They probably are. Driverless cars are the big thing. What does Waymo stand for? Waymo
good at driving than human piloted vehicles.
And people aren't happy with them because... You know, I think I'm all in favour of progress, but there is something a bit stressful about a car without a driver. It has killed a dog, not on purpose, accidentally. Well, maybe on purpose. We don't know the car's intentions, but yeah, they are a bit weird and freak people out. And basically, apparently, if you put a cone on the hood, I guess its navigation system freaks out or something.
Yeah. But to be fair, if you put a cone on somebody who's driving a car, their navigation system will probably freak out too.
Yeah, exactly. That wouldn't work either. So people have been doing this to kind of stop these cars and sort of do a kind of very gentle protest. I think the Waymo people have argued that this is vandalism, but I don't think it count. I don't think putting a cone on a thing is vandalism. I don't think you could take that to court.
Yes, any more than if a graffiti artist just put an easily removable decal on the side of a train.
Yeah, or chalk or something. So everyone's all up in arms. And I have to say, San Francisco feels like the worst place to test a driverless car because it is all angles and slopes. And I just feel like that's a disaster waiting to happen.
Not just that, but also like... You've got that divorced dad who dresses up as a nanny and he's always running back and forth between two places to change costume. And you don't want that happening when cars are going quickly.
Well, I don't know. Maybe that would speed up the process if he had a driverless taxi to take him between
locations. Because that's a lot to put into the trolley programming of the internals of this vehicle. These vehicles have to make split-second decisions about whether to run over a man or an old granny. Yeah. And if they can't tell which that person is when they're running across the road, they could malfunction as badly as if they had a traffic cone on their
heads. They'll be programmed to calculate, well, better to kill the granny because she's had more life than the young man who is a more productive member of society and has more years to live.
Oh, no. I would say the opposite. I feel like the granny, depends on how lovable she looks, but she probably has, you know, a loving brood of a family, whereas if it's like a cold-hearted businessman who loves nobody, get rid of him.
Yeah. No, I know, but remember who's writing these algorithms. They're generally in favour of the cold-hearted businessman.
Valid.
Alice, I feel like you're very techie. Are you keen on driverless cars? They kind of scare me, but I guess maybe that's how everyone feels about new technology.
Well, look, I think that the great thing about startup culture generally is that it's looking for efficiencies in the business world. So you're looking for an efficiency in the business world. You're thinking, well, I can close that gap in the world by computers. I can use that to, you know, I see this thing. I can make it more efficient using technology. I can make this more efficient using programming. And eventually the goal is that you can make something so efficient that you can stop paying the workers. Which is, of course, all of our ambition.
Yes.
If only there was a way of cutting the consumers out of it as well.
Oh, they try.
The thing is, like, a driverless train doesn't scare me because the DLR is the greatest experience anyone will ever have. And
thank
at
you.
The front and pretending...
Oh, sorry, DLR, sorry.
Pretending you're the driver on the DLR is Docklands Light Rail. For the uninitiated, is one of the greatest joys in life. But a train is on tracks, and there's really only a couple of things that can go wrong. There's only limited options. A car's just out there, free in the wild, and I just doesn't fill me with confidence.
See, I'm old enough that I've rewound a cassette tape using a pencil. I wonder if children of the future will look back fondly on times when you could disable a self-driving car with a traffic cone.
Yeah. Before the days when you put the traffic cone on and it immediately shot you in the head.
Exactly. I imagine they'll eventually become transformer cars, and if you put the cone on it, it transforms into a you know, an Optimus Prime type, and then it will take you down.
Any car is a transformer if you've got a good enough monkey wrench.
And a dream.
And a dream.
it did occur to me that it would make quite a good RoboCop sequel if you could disable RoboCop by putting a cone on his head. It would certainly be like, a lot of fun.
Again, I feel like you could disable a regular police officer by putting a cone on their head hard enough.
Yeah, hard enough, I guess. I've also, like, many British, like, cities, for years on Friday and Saturday nights, people have been, like, disabling statues by putting cones on their heads.
Yep. Yeah. I've never seen a statue with a cone on his head moving.
So exactly. And so you've got to say, well done, guys.
The thing about America, though, is that maybe not so.
What's the thing about America?
You know, guys, listen. The thing about America, they've got endless miles, literally hundreds of miles of straight road. I don't want a driverless car in Northumberland, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a car for twisting, turning roads that the Romans built. Mm-hmm. Although the Romans also like a straight road, but you know what I mean. We're not a country, I don't think, built for driverless cars. And I'm sure Australia, you can also go for miles in a straight line, but
that's the plot of Mad Max Fury Road.
Literally is. There you go. Imagine how boring that film would be if that was a driverless car.
All driverless cars. Hey, wait, driverless car chase. That would be fun. Just two driverless cars chasing
Have
each other
seen
with nobody
Fast
in them.
And the Furious? That is...
Right.
That is some driverless cars and then some men in a small booth moving their hands like this.
They, my sister's an extra in the 9th one because they filmed it in Edinburgh. And again, I have no idea why you'd want to film a Fast and Furious in Edinburgh. It is... possibly only known for being a terrible city to drive in, so...
Oh, but, yeah. I mean, yes, I was going to say it's known for being slow and calm.
Unless you're on the bus in the middle of town and you need to get half a mile away and the traffic means it takes an hour, then you're angry, very angry. But I'm fine.
And now it's time for your reviews. As you know, each week we ask our guest editors to bring in something to review out of 5 stars. Eleanor, what have you brought in for us?
Seagulls. Yeah. I've been living in my new flat. There's a lot of seagulls around. And, you know, I didn't really think about them a lot before now.
Is your new flat a clamshell?
Do you think that's attracting them? They are really, really noisy. And it sounds like children, it might be children screaming nonstop all day, every day. I don't know what's happening, but I might be anti-seagull now because of this experience. Like, everything else about where I am now, great, lovely. The seagulls, it just feels like they have a personal vendetta. They are so big. They keep swooping at my windows and I keep thinking like a pterodactyl is outside. So far, it's not been... I'd say like a 1 star out of 5 for seagulls.
Also,
not happy.
They're not like, you don't live by the sea.
I mean, I guess I sort of do, but yeah, not on the seafront.
Then I think if it's not the seafront, they're not sticking by their their job title.
No, exactly.
Of seagull.
My dad says that they are lesser black-backed seagulls, and that means that they hopefully won't be here in the winter because they migrate. But then he said that because of climate change, they might stop migrating. So this could be all year round now. So just...
And this isn't just any dad. Your dad's a bird man.
He is an ornithologist. Yeah. No, sorry. Yeah. I don't just go to him. Just like, what's your thoughts on this? He knows what he's talking about. But yeah. Seagull's bad.
A seagull once got its beak underneath my entire fish just as I walked out of the fish and chip shop on Brighton Pier and flicked it out. For him and all his other, like, he didn't,
That's
he
incredible.
Really planned this thing. I was so sad. I was so sad. I was
they
so
are,
sad.
They are clever and vicious and big and, you know what, I'd like a nice kitty wake. It's like a seagull, but it's small and delicate. That's what I'd like to replace them with.
It's also what happens after a funeral for a cat.
He's never off.
Jean-Luc, what have you brought in for us?
I'd like to review Portaloos. Because I've been thinking about them. I don't know why. I haven't managed to go to any festivals this year, and I think it's made me nostalgic. Because their greatest asset, right, is their portability. So you can take them and put them in a field or wherever you need them, or, you know, where there's a building site or anything like that. But it's also what makes them the scariest type of loo to use. Most loos, you can, like, count on the security of going into them, sitting on them and thinking, well, great, this loo certainly isn't going anywhere. So that's a rare moment of certainty in an uncertain world. But a portaloo, you can't be sure that you're walking out that door in the same place you went into it. They're too portable. So for their convenience, I would give them a 4. For the insecurity, I would give them a 2. So I give portaloos 3 stars out of 5.
Fair, very fair. I have been in some extremely fancy portaloos, which feels morally wrong.
Brick portaloos inside houses. My gosh.
No. I had a scholarship at university, and there was like a fancy do for it, and they had these. They're sort of in demountable kind of shipping container style boxes, and you walked in, and there was like music playing and real towels for wiping your hands on, and you know, gold plated.
Real towels instead of toilet paper.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's not what you expect in a portaloo. So, yeah, it was very upsetting, actually. It sort of felt discombobulating.
Oh, really?
You're like, I know what to expect from a portaloo, and this ain't it, you know?
Like imagining a goose and getting a swan.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Both of them can break your arm if they try hard enough.
Yeah, they both can. They're pretty vicious. My dad says. They have fancy ones on TV sets, but I'm never sure if the rare occasions I've been on TV sets, I'm not ever sure if I'm fancy enough to use them. Like, is there a secret portable, normal portaloo that I should be using? And this is for the fancy actors. Because I did once join the wrong food queue when I was an extra in something. I joined the food queue for the real actors, and then someone had to come up and be like, this is the queue for you're not a real actor, you have to leave.
You get a muesli bar and a slap in the face.
Yeah. No, to be fair, the food's good, but they let you know your place when you're getting it.
Fair. Here's your delicious food, scum. Now it's time for wind news, and this is the news that the Sea Wing, a technology being developed by a French company, is a kite which they're planning to attach to ships to bring them across the ocean, and not just normal ships like a sailing boat. This is not just the invention of a sailing boat. They are currently testing these massive kites on cargo ships travelling transatlantically between Europe and the US. John Luke, you've set sail on the high seas and lived the life of a pirate. Can you unpack this story for us?
Dread Pirate Roberts, in fact. Yes. Yeah. So they've called it the Sea Wing. Mm-hmm. They're attaching it to shipping containers. They think it will lower emissions by 20%, which is just that, like, I think, I always think 20% is sort of borderline ignorable in terms of reduction. Like, if there's an online sale, which is 10%, you'll go, definitely not. If it's 20%, you'll go, oh, I'll have a look. You know, so it's achieving that amount, but in lowering emissions for boats. But right, what they've done, right? They've invented sails, haven't they? Like, this is how boats used to get around. They've invented. I mean, is the next thing saying, oh, we can save some emissions by, well, with our new innovation of 30 pairs of oars and a bearded Scandinavian with a drum? Like,
this is a gritty reboot. This is a gritty reboot of ships.
Yeah, so they put a big kite on, so it looks like a kite surfer, but it's not a fun one. It's a massive shipping container boat going chug, chug, chug.
I once saw a kite surfer get lifted way off the waves and carried away into the distance.
That's fun.
Yeah, I think it was intentional, but it looked worrying.
That does sound fun. Oh, also, the sail is powered by an autopilot, so it's really easy to stop it working just with a traffic cone.
Be fair, if you threw a traffic cone into a kite, it would probably do some damage.
Mm.
Oh, it's also, kites have also been shown to lower the emissions from Edwardian children and their fathers by 25%, and up their sense of narrative conclusion fivefold.
We've gone so far forward that we're kind of going backwards, because sails are quite efficient at taking boats. You know, the problem wasn't so much with the sails, it was with the lack of hygiene and food sources and, you know, krakens. So I do wonder if The thing about, like, so, you know, we seem to be moving forward, and I mean, not forward, but, you know, we're advancing in the terms of the driverless car, but then we want to go back to sail ships because they do have zero emissions. So maybe that's also the answer for the driverless cars. We could get horse and carts back in, or a sedan chair. That's fun.
No, actually, I think you may be onto something for you, because horse and carts obviously aren't 100% fuel efficient because you need to feed the horse.
Yeah.
But if you put sails on cars, on four-wheeled vehicles, maybe that's the way forward.
There you go. You see? It's all sails from now on. Wind is everything.
Yeah.
And jelly mouse news now. This is the news that scientists have figured out how to make currently dead mice transparent in order to be able to examine their little tiny corpses for disease things after they're dead in the context of cancer research. But basically, they've managed to turn mice invisible, sort of. Eleanor Morton, you like jelly. Can you unpack this story for us?
I don't like jelly anymore. So what I can... I mean, I'm not... This is going to surprise you, I'm not a scientist, but what I could gather from this was that the problem with current cancer research is that it can only detect tumours once they're big enough for our current science to see. And what this guy has, or this team has done, is they, with this jelly mouse, is that they can see very, 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 very small cancer cells and, you know, target them before they get bigger. I'm not quite sure how... So the whole the mouse thing is that you can see inside the mouse because they've made it transparent. You can look this up. It is like a little jelly mouse, but not like a fun one from a sweet shop, like from some kind of The Thing remake. You can see inside. And you can see where the cancer cells are. I don't really understand how someone might be able to explain this to me. How this helps humans? Because would we have to go see through to look at our tiny cancer cells? What's the technology? How does that translate to? But everyone seemed very excited about it, like it was a real breakthrough. But I'm not quite sure how that translates to non-mice.
Well, I think the idea is that you look at how the cancers grow, like by examining them in the mice, okay. You maybe learn things about how cancer moves.
So we don't need to go see through. I mean, I kind of am, but.
Well, that's because you're Scottish, but that's the fear of the sun.
And I'm half mouse.
And half mouse, yeah. Yeah. It's all very... I mean, to be honest, I've always thought mice were pretty transparent. I've not had one mouse show any interest in me without knowing, that's because of the cheese. You just want the cheese. This guy is... What's he called? He's called Professor Ali Ertürk. From the University of Munich. And I bet, like, all the other scientists are absolutely sick of his stuff. Like, oh, what are you up to, Ali? Oh, I'm fighting cancer. Oh, yeah, how are you fighting cancer? Oh, I've made a mouse invisible. Oh, right, good, Ali. How are you fighting cancer today? Oh, I've taught a squirrel to tap dance. What about... I put gills on a capybara. Yeah, okay, Ali, do you want to... I've made a tortoise that constantly spins. Okay.
Do you think it's the same guy who put the ear on the mouse?
Almost certainly. Almost certainly. If not, then there's a problem. If there's just one rogue scientist, then it's like, that's one bad apple. If it's all scientists doing these things to mice, we really need to look at what kind of person.
I think if we've learned anything from the gargle, it's that there are scientists doing some very strange things.
Specifically to mice.
But it is, to be fair, a question, Alice, as to whether we've learned anything from the gargle.
If you have, please write in to us and we'll give you your money back immediately. That is the opposite of our intention.
I've learned that I don't want to see a see-through mouse. That wasn't as whimsical as I was
actually,
first
Eleanor,
picturing. Yeah.
The upside is
you
won't.
Don't need to see a see-through mouse.
We
just piled over each other to get to that one, didn't we?
My family, we're a gerbil people.
No, my family was a sitcom on BBC One.
Alice, I talked about this. I can't remember the gargle.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
We like gerbils in our household. We have had numerous gerbils. And if they went see-through, I think the only thing you'd learn is that they shouldn't eat grapes.
What's the difference between a gerbil and a hamster?
People always one's asked this. I feel like it's pretty obvious. They're totally different, but people don't seem to know much about gerbils. They're gerbils are desert mice. So sorry, sidebar. Mm-hmm. So they're desert mice. So they are basically like a mouse, but slightly differently designed in that they've got bigger feet for scurrying around the desert, and they've got a long tail, and also they're just more fun. Hamsters are really shit, if I'm totally honest. Hamsters are rubbish. They're nocturnal. They're aggressive. They don't like hanging out with anyone else. They're rubbish. Sorry, I just feel quite strongly about it.
I mean, I can tell. That brings us to the end of the show, unfortunately. I'm flipping through the ads at the back. Eleanor, have you got anything that you'd like to plug?
Only my current and forever online presence, which you can find just by Googling me. And I'm not now on Threads like all of us, so that's an extra, extra thing to add. And then I will be doing a one-off character show on the 14th in at the Edinburgh Stand, 14th of August, during the Fringe, and a three-day 14th, 15th, 16th work in progress show about ghosts at Monkey Barrel at the Fringe as well, at various times. So please just Google me and you'll find all the information.
Excellent. John Luke, have you got anything to plug?
This Sunday, the 16th of July, I'm recording my show, A World Just Like Our Own, but ... at the Moth Club at 9 p.m. and that's the last time we're going to do the show for a while, so if you're in or around London, please come to that. Tickets are very cheap at £5.50, and you can find them by googling Dice and John Luke Roberts.
Dice,
it's on the website Dice, that's how the ticket website. Okay. And that, it seems, if you just google John Luke Roberts filming July 16th, it won't bring it up, which is something I think probably wrong with how Dice are setting their website up for internet getting at it ability.
Their search engine is unoptimized.
Yes, thank you. And you can also see me all through the summer in a show called Hairy, which is a children's theatre show in South Wimbledon made with Spy Monkey, who are a brilliant comedy troupe, and the only comedy, well, in fact, probably the only people who could get me to do children's theatre in South Wimbledon. But it's really fun. Good, I think. It looks like the images, it looks amazing. I know that much. And I think it's also pretty damn good as well. If you have children between the ages of 5 and 12, or even if you don't, I think it's quite fun.
And we, the Gargle, will be at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. You can find tickets and details for that at thebuglepodcast.com. Also, I'm Alice Fraser. Find me online at patreon.com/AliceFraser. It's a one-stop shop for all of my stand-up specials, podcasts and blogs, as well as my weekly writers' meetings if you want to come and write with other people. It's a really fun thing to do. We have a little writing session, a little workshop. I enjoy it very much. This is a Bugle Podcast and Alice Fraser production. Your editor is Ped Hunter. Your executive producer is Chris Skinner. I'll talk to you again next week.
You can listen to other programs from The Bugle, including The Bugle, Catharsis, Tiny Revolutions, Top Stories, and The Gargle, wherever you find your podcasts.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.